Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for the 2nd of December, 2021. I am joined by Josh.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about the plan for segregation to end racism, as in they're going to do segregation and that's the plan to end racism. A big think right there.
Makes perfect sense, of course.
Yeah, huge brain. Also, the EU going mad over the Omicron variant and turning, well, in Greece, they're turning to vaccinating, sorry, fining the unvaccinated.
Yes.
Because if you're unvaccinated, you are money now.
And it's spreading across all of Europe now, this mania that's taken hold.
And also the Trump interview that he did on GB News with Nigel Farage, which was good fun. And also it's the first interview he's given to foreign media since that election. So we'll leave that there and we'll have some good fun with that. But some things to mention first on the website. So the first thing here being an article from John Tangney, in which he is talking about the defense of postmodern neo-Marxism, which I'm sure he has an interesting reason as to why.
He's defending the term, not the ideology, yeah, as a descriptor.
I imagined it was going to be something like that. But also there is an audio track, I presume, because I can see Jonathan Crowe's name mentioned there as well. So if you can scroll down, just show the... not logged in at the moment, but there is an audio track for Silver and Gold tier members to listen instead of reading, because reading is painful. And let's move on. So let's go to the next one, which is a direct video. This is from Thomas about his new series, which he's calling Critical Base Theory. So he's talking about who really controls you and arguing that through a Marxist lens about why the neo-Marxists are not even real Marxists.
I do like how he's using critical theory to be against the very people that are using it now, in that he's showing how it's logically inconsistent with their own narratives, using their own ideological frameworks. It's good stuff.
So if you want to go find that, go and find that. And if we go to the next one, we have the Mind of Manow. So this is Bo, who's rallied himself up again, because Bo likes to do these lovely little, I don't know, buryings of public figures about why they are just the worst. And his one on Rachel Maddow, which I'm sure will be good fun. I haven't had time to read, but I did hear some rumorings about you don't want to get on Bo's bad side, that's for sure. Anyway, and then the last thing to mention here, a premium video that's going up today. Live at 3 p.m. today, so after the podcast, which is me and Carl talking about CNN, particularly this segment from Jim Acosta, which is just... CNN is bad, and, you know, duh. But the clip in here is just unbelievable in the way they're just presenting this Republican candidate who is extremely based. And they're just like, yeah, look at all these base things they've done. Isn't that bad? And it's like, no. What kind of fairyland do you live in? You know. Anyway, go and check that out at 3 p.m. after the podcast. So without further ado, we'll get into segregation.
What?
So the segregation to end racism movement is taking hold. And we've had this in the United States as a kind of a meme, but also real, because critical race theory on college campuses, which is that they wanted like segregated dorms or segregated unions or segregated whatever, you know, for only blame people, black people in the American vernacular, to be separated from the whites, who are their evil oppressors. And when white student unions started propping up, people were like, oh crap, what have we unleashed?
It's really amazing it's got to this point, hasn't it? If you were to say to someone like 10 years ago, by the way, segregation is coming back.
Yeah, so we're doing it in Britain, specifically in Wales. And you might think, who gives a crap about Wales? And you know, you're not the only one. But the funny thing in here is, of course, that the Welsh government have fully endorsed this. And we can actually see a legitimate state, because there is the Welsh Parliament who have their own devolved powers, enacting intersectional theory into law and into the way they're going to run the country. So I look forward to turning into another socialist hellhole, except this time next door to us. But we can have a look at what they're proposing. So this is the Race Manifesto. You would have thought, maybe no, but maybe don't talk about your Race Manifesto, your race, what was it, the Welsh Race Forum they've set up.
It doesn't have a particularly good historical precedent, does it?
Yeah, you would have thought at some point...
Here's my manifesto on race. Yeah. I mean, that's never gone down well,
and again,
historically.
The narrative of like, oh, it's just on college campuses, bro. Don't worry. Okay, now it's in the government right next door to where I live. Thanks. You know, just don't get the hell with those people. So you can see them saying here, running against the wind, report on Black Lives Matter and staff experiences of race, gender, and intersectionality within the Welsh government. Great. Intersectional theory enacted by the government. Fantastic. I'm sure this is going to be wonderful. This was sent to me by Dr. Ella Hill, who has done previous work for us on the anti-white hate crimes, the data that has been hidden by the Home Office. And also she was a victim of the grooming gang scandal, I believe in Rotherham, if I'm getting that correct. So someone who has been a victim of anti-white hate that is just not recorded by our government, but again, is going to be completely ignored by the Welsh. She described this as the race equality action plan reads like an ISIS manifesto and effectively takes away all human rights from people referred to as white. And that caught my eye. So we went through it and I sent it around the office as well. We just had fun pulling out the proposals that they have, which are just mad. And let's get into it. So if we go to the next one here, we have the diversity staff networks and their recommendations. Moving forwards, networks need to make sure they are reaching their aims and providing the necessary support to members affected by issues outlined above. Here, we have collected suggestions for improving the focus groups in addition to a few further points of consideration. So they went to a bunch of focus groups that they segregated off and were like, hey, give us your thoughts as white people or brown people or whatever. And these are their recommendations. All diversity networks should be supported by relevant departments within the Welsh government to have visibility in the organisation throughout the creation of effective branding and profiles. So you remember these like LGBT plus networks for the police that are not the police? No, they are. They're secret police. You know, they work within the police and then are not officially having the same kind of responsibilities as the police. They want the same thing for race networks within the government at all levels. Housing, NHS, so on and so forth. Anything you want.
So they've got like a secretive behind-the-scenes race council of sorts.
Yes, we've had it in the police for ages for these sort of things, and now we're getting
great.
And everything else.
Sounds really promising.
But here's where it gets good. Create a subgroup for Black, Asian, minority ethnic women in the workplace, focused on creating a safe space and social peer support network. Just for Black women or BAME people in general, we're going to segregate them off. They're in a little safe space because they can't be safe around white people. And they back this up by then demanding that we create a whiteness network, which will provide a safe space for white colleagues to discuss white privilege and to take responsibility for addressing racism and to create more awareness and strengthen allyships. We're going to have a whiteness network separated off from the subgroup where the BAMEs are going to go, and this is going to end racism.
Yes, segregating people into separate groups based on racial lines. That's going to end racism.
But also, what's the point here, right? So the Black segregated group are going to go off and talk about presumably how oppressed they are or something like that. And the white group are going to go and have a staff meeting about how they're so superior that just their mere existence is able to oppress the brown colleagues they have in their workplace. I mean, you can see the underlying network. I mean, as Carl has made the maxim, the critical race theorists view Black people as inferior and white people as evil. And I think you can see it somewhat in that treatment of the two different segregated spaces as well. It's like, well, the white people, we're going to go have a staff meeting about the things that we can do, whereas you guys are just going to go sit around in the pulpit or something for a bit. It's like, okay, Welsh government. They say in here that you can see Privilege Cafe as an example of what they want to do. And we'll get into Privilege Cafe in a minute. They also say of the Welsh government, they need to increase diversity, remove barriers and supporting staff, name the barriers. The barriers are illegal, so name them. Because if you've done them, you've broken the law.
They mean self-perceived barriers, right? It's not actual barriers, not like tangible things that you can point at.
No.
It's just, I feel like people are racist, therefore this is a barrier.
They got them. Got them one. Anyway, so we'll move on to the additional goals from the government in here as well. So, I mean, we started with segregation. I'm sure it will get much better. So the additional goals written here are, participants felt that there needed to be more availability of data on progression routes for Black, Asian, and minority ethnic staff in general, and particular Black, Asian, and minority ethnic female staff. Do your job. And if you're good, you get promoted. That's how it works everywhere else. I don't know what else you want, because presumably that's how you should have it work.
But even more affirmative action, apparently.
Yeah, we hired you on affirmative action, and then we want affirmative action for the promotions as well. Okay, great.
So makes perfect sense.
They also say they want monitoring. So monitoring was also recommended as a way to help Black, Asian, minority ethnic people reach their potential at work. Sorry, mentoring, not monitoring. Mentoring. So we're going to have mentors come in.
We're going to here's your white mentor. They're going to teach you what to do.
Yes.
And this isn't going to be condescending whatsoever.
So everyone with brown skin in the Welsh government is going to get a white mentor who's going to help them reach their potential at work.
Oh, for goodness sake.
That's the race manifesto from the Welsh government. I mean, this is intersectional theory in practice. This is what people wanted. It is felt that informal learning opportunities can add value to training offers, and participants suggested starting book clubs or groups for peer learning around issues raised by BLM. So we're going to waste loads of money on loads of book clubs where people can talk about white fragility.
Explicitly mentioning Black Lives Matter as well. Great.
Yes. They have a definition of Black Lives Matter as well, which...
they have a definition of it.
Yes.
As if, you know, it's not just a political group.
But
they need to define it themselves now.
It's madder than you think, because this is the government. Again, this is not just some lunatic organization of leftists. Well, I mean, same thing. But it's meant to be a neutral body that is meant to govern for the whole country. And instead, this is what they gave for their definition of BLM, if we get the next one up. They say, BLM was founded by Elisa Garcia, foreign words, Passery Colors and Opal Tomini, as a result of the unjust acquittal of Trayvon Martin's murderer, George Zimmerman. I was like, okay, he was not found not guilty, I believe. So I don't know why they're passing judgment on the court case, but whatever. And then they continue, as the murder of black civilians via state sanctions violence continued. Just stop there. Like, the American system is just police killing black civilians and the state sanctions all of this violence. Again, murders. The murder of black civilians via state sanctioned violence. That's how the Welsh government wants the American government to be viewed.
Well...
like they're Belarus or something.
Why did the Welsh government even have an opinion on things that are going on in other countries? Is that, it's not like they have the power. They're just a devolved parliament, aren't they? And I mean, it's not like Wales is known for its large black population. I'm sure that the 10 people that live there feel very protected by the Welsh government.
I think there's like one of them is writing the stuff and the other nine are getting on with their lives. The point there being that you should see America essentially as, I don't know, like Nazi Germany. They're just killing black people. That's basically the police job. I mean, you know, they got some speeding tickets on the side they have to hand out, but mostly just killing black people.
Yeah, that's how they get their money. But
just all they do. Anyway,
where
so
the heart is.
They go on to define intersectionality as well. And this is what I mean when we talk about some of the academic stuff. It is real. Like, it ends up in government documents. It's not just on college campuses, bro. Like, it ends up with them coming up with these policies. Anyway, they stay in here, which is quite nice of them to say. In fact, as stated in the Black Lives Matter mission above, intersectionality is integral as the movement was started by three black women, and its aims to represent all black people, regardless of sexuality, gender identity, nationality, status, etc. So that's the plus of the LGBT plus there, just whatever. However, more recently, Black Lives Matter has been criticized for centering the plight of black men.
What?
I love
that. Who's been saying that?
By who? This is the circular firing squad at work, you know? Of course, well, I mean, yeah, they are black, but they are men. So, basically privileged. Anyway, so they say in here that this was a problem, and this prompted Crenshaw, Kimberly Crenshaw, who came up with the term, to create the hashtag SayHerName14 campaign, an offshoot of the Black Lives Matter movement, to address the imbalance and invisibility of black women victims of state-sanctioned violence, which will then have another offshoot, which goes on to black trans victims of state-sanctioned violence and black homosexual victims. It never ends. But what's weird is she should see this coming. I mean, anyone should see this coming, but they just ignore it and move on. But also nice of them to explicitly state that BLM is an intersectionalist organization and movement.
Yeah, normally you have to kind of figure that out for yourself, but they've actually...
Yeah, you ask them
just put it in black and white, yeah.
It's like getting blood from a stone. But, you know, when they say it in a government document, they're just, okay, great, well, I'll just quote that in future. So there's also the point, of course, that Crenshaw being name-dropped. If we go to the next one, we have, if we can scroll down on this, there's just the fact that she's talking about setting up those segregated spaces. To the last one, please. And while you have Crenshaw's works being mentioned, I mean, you see the one there, demarginalizing the intersection of race and sex. We actually have a premium podcast on that. Carl did the reading on that and went through it. It's mad, as all these things are. But go and have that check out on the website. Anyway, if we go on, we have, of course, the goals by 2030. What is Wales going to look like?
I dread to think what they've put here, to be honest.
Mm. Well, I have a bunch of ideas. So by 2030, BAME people will have, again, as if like it's a shopping list, security that hate crime in the media, including social media, will no longer occur.
It's going to remove all negative interactions.
I mean, it's like when David Cameron said, you know, I've made poverty illegal. Fantastic, mate. It's gone. It's done. But also just the idea that if you wanted to achieve that, you'd have to institute like a Chinese firewall on the internet. Because again, they're saying no hate crime on social media. Well, I mean, you people think Count Dankula is a hate criminal. They also say they want to see the first BAME First Minister. I don't know if that's a separate title. So you'll have the First Minister and then the BAME First Minister, maybe. Anyway, they also say...
They're going to be mentored by the proper First Minister, as they put it.
Mark Dreyfus will be the mentor, and then you'll have the BAME Minister who's being mentored. So they also want to see, they say in here that they don't want to be seen, that media can no longer shoehorn us into a box as entertainers or slaves.
The only two professions open to black people, apparently, according to, or BAME people, should I say.
I mean, we were laughing about that in the Wales. Office when John read it out, because we were just like, it's like if some foreigner, like someone in Chile or some alien, had been told about the West and it's racist. So they just started making up stuff. Like, yeah, the media, they just portray black people as entertainers and slaves. What? Well, what are you living in? Like, whatever. So if we continue, we have some other demands or threats. I don't know how to put them. So if we go to the next one, we have by 2030, the Welsh government will have. So what's the Welsh government going to do? Ensure that acts of microaggressions are a thing of the past. So this is someone saying, where are you from?
Right.
So no more conversations that may ever slightly offend someone. Again, microaggressions.
The doesn't make any sense at all.
Slight upset of being asked. Oh, you're different. Because you are. But anyway, they also say they want to use the levers that they have of positive action to their full extent in here. It's right at the bottom there. You can see use the levers they have for example, positive action to their full. And that means, of course, positive discrimination, racial discrimination in favor of brown-skinned people over white-skinned people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's funny is they kind of contradict themselves in the next statement. So we go to the next one. They also have just the next paragraph, and I'll highlight there. Confidence that we will be recruited on merit, through processes that are transparent and open, and no need to keep proving ourselves or to be appointed as a black token or window dressing to the service. Right. So I want to be a black token. You know, I want positive discrimination, but also I don't want people to see me as a black token. Pick one.
This is just so terrible. How are they?
I imagine
saying this with a straight face.
A lot of face palming looking at this. But anyway, move on. We have some more demands. So by 2030, BAME people will also have in the next one. Stimulated conversations that white people needed to have to come to terms with white privilege and white fragility. I have no idea what that even means. You've had a stimulated conversation with someone about race?
What is...
I'm assuming because...
This is like torture.
They're name-dropping white fragility, of course, the book, and... This is someone just saying they want to berate white people for being white, because that is what this comes down to. But also, if you talk about brown privilege, such as getting positive discrimination in your favor, and then demanding that people don't see you that way, what about brown fragility? Who's writing this? Like, who's the person who decided they were going to write a race manifesto for all the privileges they should have in society?
Well, it was Mark Drakeford, wasn't it? Was one of the authors of this.
Well, it's the diversity industry. I think he just put his name on it, as politicians usually do. Anyway. So if we move on, we have some more, which is funny. A situation where people no longer get asked, where do you come from, but are accepted for their commitment to Wales and seen so as Welsh. So foreigners want to be seen as Welsh, presumably as soon as they get off the boat. Like, no, it's not going to happen. There are native Welsh people who have been there for thousands of years and therefore are going to be seen as more Welsh.
Didn't they recently say that the Welsh language is also racist? Just in existing, right?
I think probably. I'm just going to take the guess.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Let's go to the other demands, which, again, I'm laughing, but this is actually going to become...
No, this is really depressing, actually. Yeah. Like
this is right next door to us, and it's going to become the law. I mean, that's the worst part. So they say in here, the first part here being, tackle microaggressions, encourage allyship, and blah, 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 blah. Last one is the funniest. Regular audit by external independent experts to assess lived experiences of black, Asian, and minority ethnic staff and service users. Sorry, we're going to have, like, racial Gestapo come round and interview the black staff about
their lived experience as well. So what are they going to do? Just evaluate that and just be like, yes, whatever you say is gospel. We've got to listen to this. All hail at the altar.
But also, what's satisfactory? Like, what do they want? What are they expecting to get out of that? It's just like, so, black person, tell me what it's like being black. Leave me alone, I'm trying to stack shelves. But
yeah, I mean, what are they expecting to get out of this exactly?
I don't know, but I mean, if you're living in Wales, I mean, there's a cushy job there as being a racial auditor for the government, in which all you do is just go around and ask black people how they feel. Fantastic. I mean, I get paid.
How are you feeling today? How's your day been?
Oh God, they say also including the differential experiences of ethnic minority women to be published with action plan to respond to recommendations. So more wasted money on bureaucrats to write up those racial audits that are going to be carried out by government employees. Fantastic. They also say they're going to implement this through CEOs. So if you run a public body, so CEOs of all public bodies to identify one inclusion and diversity objective where they focus on anti-racism. So So you're going to be forced to push this through all of your companies as well. And then I just thought we'd look at like the data on this, because if we go to the next one, this is just the data for the population of Wales, right?
Okay.
And you have all this stuff which is just illegal and mad, but who are they doing it for? So they say in here, 5.2% of the population identify themselves as Black, Asian, minority, ethnic. Like, okay, what is that? And if you just run it through just what is Wales' population, 156,000 people. Smaller than Swindon.
Is it really?
Yeah.
No way.
So it's a group of people who would, if they made a town, would be smaller than Swindon. And we're going to basically just throw out all discrimination law and bring in racial Gestapo, segregated spaces, and also funding for God knows who else to do what. All for that. I was like, right.
It seems like the Welsh government's got too much time on its hands, to be honest.
Too much money.
Well, they've published this entire report for essentially a very small minority of people, which, by the sounds of it, have a pretty cushy time anyway, with all the affirmative action laws already in place.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned BAME people, as they would say, people with brown skin. It's not them. It's never for them. No, it's for a collection of individuals who are getting cash, fat stacks. So if we go to the next one, we have just some reporting on this, which is from the Welsh government, working with the BAME community and partners and blah, 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 blah. They say in here, so if we stop there, so they say that they've awarded Moya Solman, who instituted the virtual privilege cafe at the beginning of the lockdowns, and has been awarded £5,000 for funding.
Wait. Virtual privilege cafe.
Virtual privilege cafe.
So it's not even a real cafe.
There is no cafe.
A virtual one, but it's still a cafe. So how do they serve their drinks?
So you can see the quote there from her. This is her responding to this, and they put this up on the website. Every week, I host a themed Zoom conversation which encourages participants to talk about their lived experiences. It has been amazing in terms of engagement with over 200 people, 200 whole people attending.
Out of what, 156,000 or whatever it was?
$5,000 to host Zoom calls.
Oh, this is taxpayer money, isn't it?
This is your money. Well, my money too. Well, oh God. But I just, you know, there's 200 people in a Zoom call. She gets paid $5,000 to sit there and listen to it. Again, good job if you can get it. And I thought we'd just take a quick look at Privilege Cafe, because of course they're on social media. They also have their own Patreon, which, yeah. They're not even just getting money from the state. They're also taking cash from retarded leftists. So, I mean, more to that. But what are they up to? So, if we go on Twitter, we just have a quick look at this nonsense in case you needed it, proving that this is a waste of time, which is them saying that they're very upset that the N-word exists in Of Mice and Men. Like, if you scroll down that fourth picture there, they're just like, yeah, the N-word is in Of Mice and Men 9 times. It's also in To Kill a Mockingbird 48 times.
But isn't racism the focal point of To Kill a Mockingbird? I've read the book, and it's not painting racism in a good light, is it? It's painting racists negatively. That's the entire purpose of the book, and portraying the language used accurately is kind of the integral element of the book in the first place.
It's like whining about Django Unchained, because the N-word is used in Django Unchained, and it's like, yeah, it's kind of part of the set.
Surely they should be advocating for things like this, not the other way around.
Well, no.
It's ridiculous.
Because people are having fun, I guess. So we move on. We also have them promoting illegal immigration, because, of course, they are. They're a bunch of leftists. So, yeah, why not? And then if we move on, we just have them also talking about whites being inferior. So being part of a global activism in an all-white team, thinking face, raising awareness of violence against all women requires collaborative working from all women, including staff, representatives of the communities they serve. An all-white team isn't global. Hashtag representation matters.
Because, of course, the colour of your skin dictates how well you can represent the interests of other people. Like, empathy doesn't exist. You have no capacity to understand other people.
No, which is why slavery's still around. Just white people never had any sympathy for anyone who wasn't white. So we just carried on doing it. No.
How can people actually buy into this? It's so depressing.
That's the best part.
Oh, yeah, like, I suppose it is just one big grift, isn't it?
Yeah. So if we move on, we also have them screeching about white panelists existing, but we'll not waste too much time on that because you get the point. They're also religious bigots. So this is whoever runs the account moaning. And they say, I've called 8 hairdressers and so far none of them provide a screen private area for women who are not comfortable with mixed salons. Mixed salons on racial basis? No. For religious reasons.
What?
She's not happy being in a salon and having her hair done with dirty kuffars around her.
Oh, right.
So that can't happen. I mean, she could be in a salon with all women, and that would be Islamic, but no, there are still dirty kuffars there, presumably touching her hair.
Could this person be any worse?
I mean, they can try. I'm sure they'll do it. And then just the last couple of things to mention is just them being mad and mask off moment.
Yes,
here.
Give us jobs.
Yes, yeah, skip jobs, management jobs, director jobs, not tokenism, but value. And then the last bit there. For example, how many of these organizations are led or run by a Somali woman from Butu Town? And that only from Butu Town. You've got to go from Butu Town. But again, it just proves the sinkhole of this ideology.
So what, a Somali woman from Butu Town, like they've got the racist equation out. They've been able to calculate everywhere around the world, this is the most oppressed place.
If you're a Somali woman from Mogadishu, too bad. Not diverse yep. enough. Need to be from Butu Town. Yeah. Anyway, and then I thought I'd mention this isn't the first time either. So we've covered this before, but I have to bring it back up with the Welsh because it's just, you know, they've gone full into it. And this is when they were doing COVID grants. And as you can see here, they have priority allocation for those most affected from the COVID-19 outbreak. Disabled people, women, people from BAME backgrounds. Basically the same categories.
What an insult.
Are you disabled or a woman? We were having the joke. It's just like, could you imagine being like, you know, with little hats and being like, please be patient, I'm a woman. Like, instead of I have autism. Dear. That's the Welsh government for you. And a bunch of people got money out of that as well. Because again, that's how these things are really funded. But I had to talk about that because it's so humorous that they've actually gone fully into intersectional theory to the point of publishing a racial manifesto. And they're going to enact it by 2030. God, I love the future.
The Welsh government are lunatics. What is wrong with them?
Yeah, but that's not staying in Wales. Okay, I'll come to us in England.
How has Westminster not just been like, yes, you need to stop doing this. This goes against like everything we stand for. There should be something to stop this happening.
I mean, if you needed an argument for just abolishing the damn thing, get on with it. But
oh yeah, get rid of devolution.
Anyway, let's move on.
So, this next segment obviously cannot go on YouTube because I am talking about COVID and the European reactions to the new variant. And therefore, if you're watching this on YouTube, make sure to check it out on our website where you are able to see it in full. And of course, we can't talk about this because YouTube's guidelines are so frustrating to deal with that even though this may well be within the guidelines, it's possible that we still get a strike anyway. So,
because, I mean, that's the thing. You've got YouTube's editorial guidelines which say you can't discuss this, this, this. And that's the written. But the de facto is how they operate as well, which goes even further. And considering the editorial guidelines are already mad, then it's not worth the risk.
So anyway, getting into it. So Ursula von der Leyen, the head of the EU Commission, has said, it's time to consider mandatory jabs. So I'm going to read this BBC article. It says, European Union countries should consider mandatory vaccination to combat COVID and the Omicron variant, the head of the commission has said. Ursula von der Leyen said, vaccines would be crucial in the fight against the highly contagious new variant. Ms. von der Leyen said it was understandable and appropriate for EU members to discuss mandatory COVID vaccinations, given that a third of the bloc's population was unvaccinated. How we can encourage and potentially think about mandatory vaccination within the European Union, she said. This needs discussion. This needs a common approach, but it is a discussion that I think needs to be led.
This needs discussion. Yeah. That's what I've got in my mind. Discussion by force.
This needs discussion. Also, I am the one who allocates funding. Yeah. So do but what I say.
If you're unvaccinated in the EU, too bad.
So it's not up to the EU to actually dictate the approach of a country. It's actually up to the individual governments in question. However, with the EU commissioner coming out and saying this is something we should do, if a government is already inclined to do it, well, they'll be like, well, the EU is encouraging us and therefore it's going to make it far easier. And we are seeing evidence of this already, which I'll get onto in a second. So the BBC even brings this in. So when you're being debunked by the BBC, you know you're doing something wrong. The BBC adds, the World Health Organization, meanwhile, said, early signs were that most cases of the Omicron variant were mild. So yeah, BBC fact-checking the EU there.
Not even a
finally.
Threat.
What was that, sorry?
Not even a threat. I mean, this is the absurdity of the freak-out.
Yeah, and it goes on to say, the World Health Organization believes that existing vaccines will still prevent severe disease among people who contract the new variant. So even the World Health Organization, who covered for China at the start of this pandemic, are saying, yeah, yeah, okay, it's not really as bad as you're saying. So this The next thing I want to move on to is an article by Reuters where it says a South African doctor, I think this is the one who actually discovered the variant, says patients with the Omicron variant have very mild symptoms. And I'd just like to read a little bit from that. So a South African doctor who was one of the first to suspect a different coronavirus strain among patients said on Sunday that the symptoms of the Omicron variant were so far mild and could be treated at home. So they don't even need hospital treatment.
Just have a cup of soup, bit of Lemsip, you'll be all right.
This is literally the same as just a regular virus. You wouldn't go to a hospital unless you were, you know, really old. But from what I gather, it's not even as bad as that, right?
It's like COVID.
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Angelique Coetzee, I think it is. Sorry for if mispronouncing your name, if you're on the off chance you're watching. A private practitioner and chair of the South African Medical Association told Reuters on November 18th she noticed 7 patients at her clinic who had symptoms different from the dominant Delta variant, albeit very mild. And I'm going to just talk about some of the symptoms. So, you know, if you've got it, I mean, that's still useful information because I'm going to elaborate later on. It's actually not too bad to get this one because, of course, it's going to make you resistant to the other variants as well. Or at least that's my understanding of it. I'm obviously not a clinician or a virologist or any of that. But
just to be clear, don't go get it for a laugh. But
yeah, don't make yourself ill deliberately. I know. Shocking advice. But supposedly, people reported being extremely fatigued for about 2 days with body aches and a headache. That's the symptoms. Symptoms at the stage were very much related to normal viral infection. And because we haven't seen COVID-19 for the past 8 to 10 weeks, we decided to test. This is how they found it, basically, because COVID wasn't so much of a problem at the time.
Hang on, does it have the same death rate as COVID or is it literally just fatigue?
Yeah, it's not nearly as dangerous, basically.
Oh.
So, yeah. It's funny that, isn't it? And yet this is what Ursula von der Leyen is calling for, you know, mandates European-wide to combat this new variant, which, you know, is not particularly bad in the first place. In fact, you know, if you were to pick one, this would probably be the one you would want to get, as it will make you immune in the future. So she goes on to say, most of them, we're seeing very, very mild symptoms. None of them so far have admitted patients to surgeries, and we've been able to treat these patients conservatively at home. So yeah, you get the idea. So I'm going to move on to this article by Hugo, which is very good. So Hugo wrote an article on our website talking about the movements against COVID tyranny, which is all the protest movements in Europe, which really don't get enough media coverage.
Well, it's not just Europe either. I mean, you've seen it, of course. Mm-hmm. Australia has been massive, mm-hmm. thankfully. And there's even been some in like Japan and some.
Yeah, obviously they've been worldwide, but this article focuses on Europe, and he's very good at documenting all of the different things that people have been doing. So if you want to know what people are doing to resist these restrictions, which I'm going to get onto in a second, it is supposedly not in vain, although I'm very cynical about the government actually listening to these people. So the first thing I wanted to mention is Greece is to fine over 60s who refuse COVID-19 vaccination. So the fine is of €100, which is £85.
What is that, like 10 years' salary in Greece at this point?
Yeah, the way their economy is going, it's a lot of money to them. But no, I mean, it could be a much larger fine, but it's still a monthly fine, which is not particularly good because,
you're going to be fined if you don't take this vaccine.
Yes.
I mean, I this might be the worst thing that has happened in response to mandates. Because you've had like, oh, you won't be able to visit restaurants then. Oh, you won't be able to go into these stores. Fuck those stores then. Like in Lithuania, it was bad enough. We had some like reports from people there who were saying, you know, I'm some of the people who just don't want to do it, not going to do it, go to hell. And they got to the point where they literally couldn't go and buy food, even from like local corner
stores. Yeah, that is awful.
But then to be also, yeah, we're going to take your money as well.
Yeah, it's totally unbelievable. Voluntary. And monthly as well. And from pensioners.
Yeah.
So they're taking...
start with the pensioners.
Taking money from pensioners, which this policy starts from...
I want to do it to the obese. I want to do it to those who drive recklessly. I mean, this is the point that's been raised by Richard Tice, and he's right, which is just, this is all in the age of health, right? Because the pensioners all cost us money if they go to the hospitals. We'll just do it for everything else then.
Yeah, it's funny that it's just been introduced for COVID alone, whereas, you know, it's very difficult to justify in any other area, seemingly, although I think it's not justifiable in any area, of course.
If you get drunk, you're fined. You can only have one drink. No binge drinking allowed.
The entirety of England will be bankrupt. So these start from mid-January, and this is coming from the Prime Minister himself. The money will supposedly go towards the Greek health system, which is struggling, apparently.
What is it not?
Yeah. Well, I mean, everything's struggling in Greece anyway. So, I mean, meaning the statement, apparently about 63% of Greece's 11 million population is fully vaccinated. But supposedly about just over 500,000 over 60s are still yet to get the jab. So they're just trying to force them, basically. But it gets worse than that. Don't worry. The new German chancellor wants to make vaccination mandatory everyone, forced by the government.
There's a Peter Hitchens quote coming in mind. It's just the EU is Germany by other means. I mean, when you have the president of the EU saying exactly the same thing that the chancellor of Germany is saying, well, aren't they both German as well?
Yes, they are.
Underlying. I mean, take a guess.
Yes, Germans being tyrannical. I mean, some things never change. There's also hyperinflation. It's like 1930s all over again. So the incoming German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, reveals that he'll push for a vaccine mandate for all German residents and blame the unvaccinated for the recent surge in coronavirus cases in the country. So he was recently elected. I don't think he's actually in his position yet, but he said he fully intends to take this position, and it is a matter for the German parliament to vote on. He can't just force this through, but he says he's going to push this.
Do you think the Germans are going to say no to that?
More rules?
Yeah. The AFD in the corner just being like, fuck.
And talking about people who love rules, Austria, of course, imposed full lockdown on the country with mandatory vaccination. They were the second country. Lots of media outlets reported that they were the first, but actually the Vatican was the first to bring in a mandatory COVID vaccination mandate.
I mean, you're eventually visiting a guy's house at that point. That's
frank, so. The Pope is forcing people to be vaccinated. Well done, Catholics.
Radio.
So yes, this is something that happened on the 17th of November, so it's not necessarily new news, but I thought I'd mention it all the same. I'm kind of giving a full forecast of tyranny across Europe. Like, we've got some light tyranny in Eastern Europe, heavy tyranny in the German areas.
Extreme tyranny in Greece.
So Finland has taken a very strange approach. So Finland orders bars to stop alcohol sales at 5 p.m. without a pass. So apparently, if you don't have your COVID pass, you're not going to be served alcohol past 5 p.m.
So you can still buy alcohol as long as you've got the pass.
So 4:30, if you don't have the pass, you're fine. As soon as the clock hits 5, COVID becomes more dangerous. Beware. That's what the Finnish government says. So yeah, it's just bars and restaurants can't serve alcohol to people. I don't really know what the justification for that is. I can only assume that they don't want people to get drunk and then get closer together or something like that.
But I mean, one of the things, these are all entirely arbitrary, right? I mean, like
makes no sense.
The fines are arbitrary. The lockdowns on people being able to buy alcohol at 5 p.m. is completely arbitrary. The idea that we're going to stop you from going into these restaurants is completely arbitrary. But I have to wonder, like, what is unacceptable to people who accept these things? I mean, if they are going to accept just random things because, you know, F the unvaccinated, well, what won't you accept? I mean, do you actually have any lines, ever?
I'm sure some people would be told, oh yeah, by the way, if you pat your head and hop on one leg, it makes you immune to COVID, therefore you must do that wherever you go.
But I mean, like,
they'd be all on board with it.
We're going to ban the unvaccinated from going on the highways or something.
No, it's so ridiculous.
Why not? It makes
as much
sense. But that's the thing. They're like, well, what is actually a line for a person who supports such a thing?
Well, we're seeing the blurring of the lines right now, aren't we? Like, these sorts of restrictions on people is basically unprecedented, except, you know, in the 1930s.
Well, I mean, not even then. I mean,
well, at least you could go to...
The Jews were treated worse, so I'll say that.
So, also Spain, for some reason, has taken the opportunity to take a dig at Britain by not admitting British tourists over the next month unless they have proof of COVID vaccination. Beforehand, you could just have a negative test and you could go to Spain.
But not having COVID is not good enough.
Yeah, all of a sudden, just they're like, oh, actually, we need to just bring this in arbitrarily, yeah, even though, you know, most vaccinated country in Europe.
We're not concerned with you not having COVID. We're concerned with you not having paid Pfizer their dose.
Yeah, well, it's just so absurd, isn't it? Just like arbitrarily bringing this in, just perfectly fine for up until now. You can go there with a negative test, which is probably better evidence that you don't have coronavirus than the vaccine, because you can still get ill. So Hungary has also introduced mandatory vaccinations in the workplace, or they have allowed the employer to decide for themselves. So Tucker Carlson going over to Hungary and saying, oh, look at how great it is. Yeah, well, where's your freedom now?
They're great on immigration. They're not great on other
this, things. Yeah.
I mean, I remember, I think the Hungarian parliament wants to act, pass essentially a bill that made Viktor Orban a dictator under their COVID regulations. I mean, everyone else has kind of done something similar, so he's not the only one. But, you know, if I remember correctly, they gave him just insane powers.
Mm-hmm. Slovakia has taken a very different approach in that they're just going to pay people money. If they're over 60, they're going to give them 500 euros if they get vaccinated. So I suppose that's not as bad, although I don't approve of government reallocating other people's money.
But it's just, you know, it's better than being fined, I guess.
Well, being given money is better than being fined, yes.
Imagine having this discussion 2 years ago.
Yeah, should the government take your tax money and then reallocate it to you?
No. But like when we're discussing behavior. The jab being made, and that's a marvel of science, and we'll get it done in a year, you know, Trump proposing it. Also, if you don't get it, like imagine before it was out, if we said, if you don't get it, we're going to start fining you.
Ridiculous.
No one would have accepted it. It's just a slow creep, and now it's normal.
Mm-hmm. There's this Bloomberg article, which we can't get on screen because Bloomberg are annoying. Also, as they've been so difficult to us, I'm going to point out that there's a photograph with Michael Bloomberg and Ghislaine Maxwell. Just throw him under the bus a little bit. Well, that trial's going on.
Yeah.
He's not letting us look at the article. But basically, they say that Lithuania is not letting anyone enter bars or restaurants without their COVID certificate. And also, you know, any cafes, restaurants, shopping malls, cinemas, beauty salons, or any public indoor premise or event. And they're going to be further tightened to apply to anyone over the years of 12 from December, the end of December. And then Ukraine as well, it's allowing its teachers and government officials to go on permanent unpaid leave if they're not vaccinated. So there's that as well. And the US, of course, I know this is not in Europe, but President Biden has, of course, announced emergency rules forcing large private employers to require vaccination and regular testing. And, you know, it's not looking good, basically, is what I'm trying to say. So the consequence of this is, as brought up by Breitbart recently, is between, this is the UK here, between 240,000 and 750,000 potential cancer cases missed during UK lockdown. So, of course, this is a lockdown and not vaccine mandates, but we can see that there are lots of consequences to restricting people's freedoms here. Like the National Audit Office says, the independent spending watchdog for the British government warned in a report that hundreds of thousands of people in England who have been referred to their doctors for suspected cancers have not been seen, I suppose, while there have been tens of thousands of fewer people starting cancer treatment than expected. Press release prefacing the report published on Wednesday said, millions of people have also avoided seeking or been unable to obtain referrals for healthcare during the COVID-19 pandemic. And the NAO estimates, as I said in the title, between 250,000 to 750,000 missing urgent referrals. In addition, they estimate that between 35,000 and 60,000 fewer people starting treatment for cancer than would have been expected. They're estimating that this is going to result in many people dying, basically, because of
this is just not sick. Getting...
Yeah, I know.
But it's... Everyone said, look, if you lock down the country, you're going to be focusing on COVID and you won't be focusing on the other people. This is how all government policy works. And came true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, loads of people are going to die from cancer who didn't need to die because you wanted to save people from COVID.
And now... Now we've got a UCL report, again reported on by Breitbart, saying that at least 10,000 unnecessary cancer deaths are going to be caused by this. So it's prioritising one preventable disease for something that is eventually going to kill you and must be treated, right?
And also treatable, like we can save them.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. And it seems like we've just gone on some kind of COVID mania where we're only prioritising COVID. We've forgotten that other diseases exist, and it is quite frankly sickening. And I mean, my own father had cancer and he thankfully survived, but I mean, I can easily imagine that the people who are suffering through this, not only the people themselves with cancer, but the families of the people you know, risking COVID is nothing compared to having the certainty that someone might die of cancer. And this is just one thing, of course. 50,000 children's surgeries postponed and deaths on transplant waiting lists nearly doubled due to lockdown. So, yeah, killing children is basically what's happening here. It is sickening. I don't really have the time to go through this because I don't want to eat into your segment. But the final thing I wanted to mention as well is that in the UK, lockdowns doubled the rate of depression as well. So not only is it physical health conditions that this is impacted, but it's also people's mental health. And this is, of course, getting swept under the rug as we've got to overemphasize how dangerous COVID is. And it's sickening. And I really don't want to have to see it anymore, to be honest.
But everyone who said this was going to be a problem was right.
Of course they were, yeah.
Everyone warned about it, everyone mentioned it, and the government ignored it. Who cares? And now
we're seeing the consequences now, and you know,
it's good to have the data at least, I suppose.
People should be held responsible for this. This is not something that should be swept under the rug. There should be people who are in charge of the decisions being held responsible for the people being killed.
Let's move on, so...
Hopefully something a bit more cheerful.
Yeah, it is more cheerful. So this is the Trump-Nigel Farage interview. So Trump came over to the UK and gave his first interview to foreign media from outside the US, I think, since he lost his election. I think that's how I have to phrase this, so let's put it that way. And we have the interview itself. So the interview was really good. I quite enjoyed it. I didn't know where it was going to go, but there are, of course, things we can't talk about because YouTube. And so you can see Nigel interviewed him for about... I think it was about 30 minutes interspersed with other interviews here, so it comes out like 2 hours. So I thought we'd cut it down and just go to the best bits.
I also, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I also like how it's Nigel Farage doing like one of the first foreign press interviews with Trump for a very long time as well. So it really goes to show that Trump really approves of his politics, and it's good to see that there's that recognition.
There's a bit of bromance there that's quite cute.
There's a bit of a parallel, I think, because they're both demonized by the press to a ridiculous degree, weren't they?
Yeah, globalists hate them.
Mm-hmm.
With one easy trick. Anyway, so the first clip we're going to play is about the Majesty, her Queen herself. Let's go.
You also got on well with the Queen. You really enjoyed it. You really enjoyed that.
I think
didn't
she's
you?
A fantastic woman. She is a fantastic woman. I was supposed to spend like a half an hour with her. I ended up being there for much more than an hour, and everyone said, oh, that's so rude. But I said, no, but she liked it and I liked it. I'm not going to be rude. And we had a great time together. We then had an evening, the likes of which you rarely would see. And I think she was laughing and smiling. We got along great. We talked the whole night. She is a great, wonderful woman.
Yeah, well, she's been there nearly 70 years now on the throne. Yeah, it's incredible. And she's still head of state in Canada, Australia. I mean, it's unbelievable.
And respected by everyone.
Yeah.
And no scandal, no anything. Think of it. She's done this for more than 70 years. And she's never had scandal about herself.
No.
No scandal, no anything. She's an incredible woman.
I love the Chiron there as well. Trump, the Queen, is a great, wonderful woman. Great. Anyway. But here we go. So that's the setup for them talking about the royal family, because of course the big thing that I think was most interesting was, of course, talking about so you've got Her Majesty the Queen, a paragon of virtue, and has worked well for us as our monarch. I mean, this kingdom has been blessed with someone like that, frankly.
I do appreciate that she's, you know, kept out of politics as much as possible. She did mention something about the COP26 climate summit, saying that they need to do something to save the children, but
that was caught off a mic that shouldn't have been.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Dear.
But anyway, but that's the point. It's like, well, Trump was six when she came to the throne. I mean, this is the stability she was able to bring to this country and has, and I don't think we'll ever get one as good as her again. I mean, some other facts in here I just have to mention. I mean, like, David Cameron, Theresa May, and Boris Johnson were not born when she came to the throne. I mean, this is the level of expertise and grace she has carried herself through so many years, to the point that everyone just loves her. I mean, there is not a mass movement of disliking her, and she is just a paragon of what it is to be queen.
Amongst people who are kind of Republican in disposition,
yeah, you can
they
say,
appreciate the Queen still. They might be like, well, I'm not too sure about the others, but at least the Queen's good.
Yeah, she has given this United Kingdom such stability that we could not ask for. And then you have to compare her to Meghan Merkel, or how are you saying? Anyway, so this scum of a human being who decided that No, I'm not going to try and defend the monarchy or stability or this United Kingdom, which it gives its stability to. No, I want to destabilize the United Kingdom, and has done her best to do so. So we can see the response Trump had to her getting Megxited, as Nigel said, to the United States, and is now trying to poison that country. Let's play.
Something you may not think is quite as wonderful is a recent British export to America. And I think we're kind of quite pleased to have got rid of him, really, is Prince Harry, of course, and Meghan living over here, being not only disobliging about you at every given opportunity, but actually the entirety of the conservative movement. And now we hear that she's ringing up senators, ringing up members of Congress, lobbying for law changes, and doing some of this on headed paper that says the Duchess of Sussex. And we saw that Oprah Winfrey interview, and it turned out later a lot of what she said simply just wasn't true.
Yeah.
Should she go into American politics?
I'm not a fan of hers. I wasn't from day one. I think Harry has been used horribly. I think someday he will regret it. You know, a lot of people are saying I'm very good at the prediction business. I think someday he will regret it. He probably does already. But I'm not a fan of hers at all. And I think she's very disrespectful to the Queen that we just spoke about, who's such a great woman, who's such a great person, a historic person. I think she's very disrespectful to the royal family, but maybe most importantly to the Queen. And I just, from day one, I never got it. I never got it. I see her. I listen to her. She's trying to do things that I think are inappropriate, very inappropriate. But I think Harry's been used and been used terribly. It's ruined his relationship with his family.
Completely.
And it's really, really, I think it hurts the Queen.
Yeah, and you can't use a royal title and get involved
in
American
affairs. Well, I didn't know she was doing that, but certainly
she has been doing it.
It's not appropriate.
No, I mean, Trump right on the money, though.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have put it better myself. And I've remembered something, actually. I'm not sure whether it's true or just a misconception, but I know that there was an informal rule within the royal family that you can marry whoever you want as long as they're not American, which I thought was interesting.
It should be made formal. For people who might not know, I mean, the attitude in this country around that scum of a woman is essentially that she's despised because, well, she was attacking this country through the medium of the monarchy, the crown, and the queen. I mean, the attacking of the Queen, trying to smear them and throw mud at them the whole time because she's having a hissy fit because she can't go into politics. That's what you signed up for, not going into politics. And the fact that she tried to do that here, disgraced herself, tried to destabilize the country by doing so, you're not allowed to do it because the fact that the monarchy doesn't is what gives this country the stability that it grants us, and instead was trying to destabilize the country. Horrible. Right that she's been kicked out, essentially, and deported to the United States is, you know, one fate, not worse than death, but, you know, one of them. And so she's out there. But then, you know, not content with trying to poison this country, the fact that she then tries to go into politics in America. I mean, I the gall of this individual to do such a thing. And we have the story here because they referenced it, so I thought I'd fact check them. And this is from the Australian news. And they say Meghan Markle uses Duchess of Sussex title whilst lobbying for paid leave. So this is her going to senators, senator after senator. There's some campaign for paid leave to become a thing or to be extended in the US. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what it is. You're not allowed. I mean, you're not allowed in Britain as a monarch or a member of the royal family to then take a royal title to the United States of America. You know, the country, the whole purpose of it is to revolt against the crown and then to lobby there in their political system for political change or whatever. I mean, I can't think of anything more absurd just on the face of it.
This could all be solved with one thing. Get Prince Harry to take a paternity test and it'll all...
I wish. Quite frankly, he should just divorce her and come back or just do something else with
he
your life,
He should go back to flying Apaches in the Middle East again. He was cool when he did that.
Yeah, I mean, I love how Trump's picked up on the obvious power dynamics between those two. And he's just like, well, I bet he regrets it.
She definitely wears the pants, doesn't she?
I bet he regrets it as well.
Yes.
Because quite frankly, it's destroyed his relationship. She doesn't care. I don't think she's ever shedded a tear for that. I mean, it definitely doesn't look like it. And the fact that she would be so brazen to get into politics in the UK, get kicked out for it, and then go to the US and be like, I'll just carry on using the royal title and lobby for change here.
Wasn't it also rumoured that she was thinking about running for the presidency at some point as well?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, she looks like an actual lunatic.
Yeah, she definitely does.
Full-on psychopath.
I mean, I'm going to be an armchair psychologist here and say that there's something going on there. I mean, I'm not going to say anything specifically because...
Well, you're the one with the qualifications, so...
Well, I mean, I'm not a clinical psychologist. They're the ones with the qualifications, but I don't know. I get that funny impression, but I'm not going to say anything else because I don't want a lawsuit, thanks.
Okay, but the details in here, just to get them buttoned down. So they say, Meghan has been calling US senators to lobby them on the issue of paid maternity leave only weeks after she wrote an open letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on the subject and using the title, I've forgotten her title now because it's
Duchess of Sussex.
Who really cares? She doesn't really have it, does she? Just Meghan over there. not anything to do with the royals, and quite frankly should have lost the title in formality. So they say in here that as a senator, Shelley Moreau Capitino, or Capitou, I don't know, a Republican from West Virginia, told the website Politico, quote, I was in my car, I'm driving, and it says caller ID blocked. And she goes, Senator Capitino? I say, yes. She says, this is Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex. And then the senator goes on to talk about how inappropriate and weird it was that she decided to say Duchess of Sussex, because you don't deserve that title. It means nothing to the Yankees, because why would it?
I don't think many Americans know where Sussex is.
No, but it's. I don't know how to get across to an American how disgusting it is of someone in the royal family to use their royal title, even if they were a proper royal and not some scumbag Yankee changeling, to then use that to lobby for political change.
Well, one of the,
especially in public.
Yeah, one of the foundational cornerstones of our constitutional arrangement with the monarchy is that they remain impartial to politics and allow politics to go on without their influence. And they serve their role independently, and they don't use their titles and influence to influence politics because it would be undemocratic.
Yeah, and whenever there is a slip-up, usually the Queen has said something, she's expressed an opinion, and it's caught on tape by accident or a hot mic or something like that, because she's a dutiful person. Prince Charles, not so much, and will go out there and do these things.
The Black Spider memos is a great example where he was writing letters to ministers trying to influence them on environmental policy, I think it was.
But as soon as it's found out, it is rightly condemned by everyone on every political side. It's just like, what the hell are you doing?
I think
it's not allowed.
It's one of the few things that can actually unify people in this country is when a royal steps out of line, you're like, no.
Yes, and this is one of them. I mean, again, my scorn is not unjust or unreasonable, I don't think.
No, definitely
not. It is actually disgusting. So, you know, very good on Trump to stand by us in that regard.
To put things into context, if you're not from the UK, this kind of principle of our constitution is like someone threatening the First or Second Amendment, like the foundational amendments to your
This is them
country.
Trying to take our guns.
Yes, this is our equivalent.
I wish we had the guns. Anyway, so the point here as well being that Trump is not just siding with the right or something like that, as some people might view it, but no, he is siding with Britain itself, because the Queen and the Crown are the embodiment of the country. And as I said, everyone condemns any kind of interference in politics, and her doing this in the United States is even more weird. Anyway, so that's enough of the royal stuff. Just want to say Meghan is scum, and she is. Well, I thought we'd get on to the other things Trump had to say, because they're also interesting. So he's had some thoughts on the elections, and I think we have to report this as Trump just says, we had a great election, and nothing else. Let's play the clip.
We had a great election. We ended up, it was a election, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm going to cut it there. We can't play what Donald Trump had to say on the election, because, of course, and you might think, well, why did you bother putting it in? Because I don't think this censorship should ever be forgotten. The fact that they can have this chat on daytime TV because it's Ofcom regulated, but on social media, all of this discussion of what he has in his head about the election is just banned. We can't talk about it. We can't even play him saying what he thinks.
Yeah, it's also very different because in the UK, this can be talked about on television relatively fine, right? But as soon as it gets online, because it's a US-controlled thing, the dynamic completely shifts. And it's very strange that...
Well, it's not a US-controlled thing. It's a Silicon Valley-controlled thing.
Well, yes.
And they're all Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact that power dynamic exists in the West until it is gone, free world my ass. Anyway, so I thought we'd move on from that because we can't talk about it. We're going to have to talk about BLM instead, which I thought was funny. So let's play this next clip.
The Black Lives Matter movement, which is now becoming increasingly, I think, political, don't you?
It's shocking that it started off, with pigs in a blanket, right? You know that, right?
Yeah.
You know the expression, fry them like bacon. And that was about our police, our great police. And all of a sudden this becomes mainstream? I don't really think so.
So they're not just about racial equality, then?
Well, I think they're about politics, but I think they're about a lot of other things. If you go back to their original founding and what they were saying, kill the police. What they're saying is kill the police.
I know.
And that becomes mainstream. Not good.
Sorry, I'm laughing at that. Not good. It's just, oh, I miss him. Anyway, but also it's obvious. Pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. This was being chanted originally in 2016 when BLM blew up, and then it devolved into the Dallas shooting in which a BLM supporter went out and shot police.
Well, I mean, yeah, the rhetoric led to someone actually being killed, right?
Yeah, so the fact that they came back in 2020, and you can see a little bit of skittishness in Nigel Farage there, in which, I don't know if it's just because he's interviewing, but you're saying, oh, they're not just about racial equality, are they? And you know Nigel knows. There is no way Nigel doesn't know the bunch of commies and racial socialists. But still, there's this weird skittishness of just not really wanting to condemn them fully in the British context.
Well, I think he's very cognizant of how the press operate, isn't he? So he doesn't want to say anything that could be cut out of context.
But that's really a bad argument. It's like saying we don't want to criticize the Chinese because, you know, the press might say you're a China hater, racist. I mean, it's like, well, they are doing genocide, so
Me arguing for it.
I know, but I'm disappointed in the British context. Not just Nigel, I'm having a go at him, but it's more the entire narrative in this country from elements of the right and, of course, the press in general, is that we'll have tiptoeing around this. Whereas you can see Trump, don't waste the time. No, these people have killed cops. They instituted mass riots across the country that led to people like David Dorn being killed and many, many others. No, they don't give them the time of day.
I'm still amazed that they're not designated as domestic terrorists because they function as one. Like in 2020, they burnt America to the ground and are responsible for killing, I don't know how many people it is now. I've lost track.
I think it was dozens in the riots, and I think it was six cops in Dallas. So it's like, fantastic. And I'm sure the other chap, the guy who threw drove the car into a bunch of kids. I mean, we saw his Facebook post, but whatever. Anyway, so let's move on to the Biden administration regime getting rid of the Winston Churchill bust, which is quite an interesting story. This obviously relates to Britain. Let's play this one.
Churchill's statue defaced and all of these things.
Well, you saw Churchill's beautiful bust being removed from the White House. When I got there, I said, send it back. They called, would you like to have the bust of Winston Churchill, a great one, right?
Yep.
Even you would say that, Nigel.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I said, I absolutely want it explained. And as you know, President Obama, I believe, sent it back. He didn't want it. And I said, let's bring it back.
No, well, Joe Biden got rid of it on the first day.
Did he? No.
Which is why, of course, surprised. There's been no advancement with trade deals and all the rest of it.
I mean, why would you do that with Winston Churchill and you're trying to get along with your country? And you send, it's such a token, but such an important token. No, I had it back for my entire time.
The point being that the Bush administration had Winston Churchill's bust, and then Obama moved in and decided to move it upstairs. He didn't want it in the Oval Office, which, weird, okay. He wanted MLK's bust there instead, apparently. And then when Trump got in, he was like, no, this has been here for a long time. It's like LBJ got it originally. And it signifies our special relationship with Britain. Let's have it in there, put it back in, had it the whole time. And then first day Biden moves in, throws it out.
Well, he always goes on about how he's Irish, right? So he hates the English by kind of genetic predisposition, apparently.
Yeah. But just from a geopolitical standpoint, I mean, which side of the American debate are the Brits to side with? And if we have one guy in the American political systems on our side, I mean, just consistently, it is Trump.
Absolutely.
He's making the signals that he wants to work with us, the signals that he actually likes us as well. Whereas you have Biden over there, who's like, I'm Irish.
I haven't heard Joe Biden give such glowing praise towards the Queen.
No.
I'd love to hear him have to spit it out, though.
Churchill's beautiful bust, says Trump. Anyway, so let's go for the next clip, which is just, where is America now in the world? And speaks for itself, doesn't it? So let's play.
World right now.
I think it's at the lowest point it's ever been at. I don't think it's ever been in a position like this. We're not respected anymore. I will tell you, there were no planes flying over Taiwan. And the name wasn't even mentioned. You didn't talk about Taiwan when I was president. It wasn't going to happen, what they're doing now. And they'll wait till after the Olympics, I assume, and perhaps something will happen. But it's not good if you're there and you have bombers flying over your country constantly, which is constant. With Russia, we had no problem. I had no problem with, you didn't mention North Korea, Kim Jong-un.
No, when you crossed the line and you
I got along with him great. I got along with him Almost as well as I
Little Rocket Man, you called him.
I did. And we became very friendly, like you. Sort of like you.
He forgave you.
But you know, the truth, we didn't have a problem. And now you've got a problem with them, too. You didn't mention that one. And
yeah.
Honestly, that's a big problem because he does have serious nuclear power. And many other things. If you take a look at energy independence, we're energy independent, first time ever. And now we are going and begging for oil. We're going back begging for oil. We go to Saudi Arabia. We go to Russia. OPEC. We go and say, please give us oil. We had so much oil, we didn't know what to do with it. A gallon of gasoline was $1.87 when I left. Now it's going to be $7.50 in California.
I mean, it's kind of depressing. You can kind of hear his voice getting more depressed as he lays it out as well. Because it is just so tangible.
It's the destruction of his legacy in office, in a way. So you can understand, he worked so hard to get the country in order, and then someone comes in and messes it up to the level of Biden.
It's just so tangible. That's the thing as well, in my mind, where it's, you have people always talk about, oh, everything's bad now. Yeah, but he can actually point to the things. I mean, like with the Afghan evacuation bungled, because Biden changed the date and then didn't do the planning, and then the whole thing collapsed. Well, whose fault is that? And then you have the oil reduction. I mean, remember the first day Biden got in, executive order, no oil pipeline, oil reduction here, no more oil wells over here. And then, well, okay, we're not producing the oil we need. Price go up. What did you think was going to happen? You absolute moron. And now he's going back to the old situation of begging the Saudis for it.
The fact that there was oil companies were actually paying people to take barrels, and now it's gone to the point where, you know, there's...
You couldn't have had a better market with shale being what it is, but... Whatever, he's, you know, absolutely destroyed that. But then also the no strength whatsoever in his character or in his global presence.
I mean, Trump's strongest policy area was his foreign policy. He did really well in what he did.
We're the big boy in this neighborhood, and we're going to put anyone who steps out of line in their place.
Mm-hmm.
That's the role of the hegemon. And the fact that the Biden administration are like, oh no, international agreements, we'll have a chat. Why do you think there are
going to pay money to Afghanistan?
Yeah, we'll see.
Who on earth would do that?
Gender programs. Anyway, we're running out of time, so we'll end with the last clip, which is about him running for 2024.
If you love the country, you have no choice. It's not a question. It's just, this is a wonderful, beautiful life. But I like that, too, because I was helping people. That's why I did it. And I think you'll be happy in the future, too. Because that'll be your next question, but you'll be happy in the future.
Well, I know you can't answer that question because it would start the campaign clock ticking.
Right.
But we've got the midterms coming up in less than a year. Are you going to be out on the campaign
trail? Yes, I will. I'll be helping a lot of people. We've been endorsing candidates. I'm 152-2. My endorsement, 152 wins and two losses.
Okay.
And those two losses were actually by people that were... The people that won were more Trump than I was, okay? So they won. But what happened is, what's happening is everybody wants the endorsement has become very important, the most important and the most powerful endorsement that our country has seen. And so I have an obligation to make sure the right people get in. And we have many, many people online. Actually, when I leave here right now, I've got four candidates that want an endorsement. It's a very important job because we're going to have a very big 22, and I think we're going to have an even bigger 24.
So that's the end of his statement on that. He can't officially say he's running for office because apparently legal things or whatever. And but, I mean, read between the lines.
I mean, the fact he didn't say no is enough, really, isn't it?
We're going to have a great 2024. And DeSantis is running for governor again. He's not running for president. So who's it going to be?
Yeah. I don't know who else it could possibly be. Maybe Ted Cruz, but other than that, I think Trump.
You got to think, if you're the Dems on that side of the aisle, though, just give him the 4 years already, frankly. Like, what are you going to do, run Biden again?
There's no way. I mean,
who else are they going to run? I mean, there is no one. They've got no talent. They don't garner any talent whatsoever. I mean, when Trump goes, they've got heaps of people they can put in charge.
They're going to run AOC.
The movement. you got AOC over there and Bernie Sanders. Good luck. Anyway, let's go to the video comments.
Tony D and Little Joe, to answer Callum's question about New Jersey. It's basically split into North and South Jersey. North Jersey is sort of the suburbs of New York City. South Jersey is sort of the suburbs of Philadelphia. South Jersey, of course, has the Pine Barrens and a lot more farms. North Jersey tends to be more industrial, kind of like you've seen on The Sopranos. It also has Jersey City and Newark. Cities on their own, but the crime does bleed in and out from New York and New Jersey in that area.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
I mean, that's interesting. Yeah.
While any adaptation of a book to the screen is going to be inferior, I cannot help but recommend the BBC series I, Claudius, the story of an imbecile grandson who no one respects, overlooked by the machinations of a corrupt institution, who becomes emperor and then has time to regret his life's achievements. It is, I would argue, a cautionary tale about the wielding of power.
I shall float inertly in the stagnant pool. Let all the poisons that lurk in the mud hatch out.
Already? I mean, it's got more action than our book club, so I'll give them that. But yeah, there's the review of I, Claudius for you. Get the next one.
I think it's just a matter of time before we see Dr. Fauci under oath being questioned. And he suddenly comes out and says, you can't handle the truth, just like in A Few Good Men, because I think that's about the point we're at now.
Yeah, probably true. I mean, I love him being there like, I have been damaged by, you know, I am the science.
I can imagine him just becoming really deranged, like, I am the truth.
Yeah. There must be some good, science. Like, sorry. Fauci Palpatine memes being made. Wherever they are, please send them forward.
I love democracy.
So I am here at the grand opening of my sister's LGB bookstore, book cafe, where you can buy stuff like this and this. It's sort of strange, but they actually renovated and painted this entire place. They worked really hard, so best of luck to her, honestly.
Yeah, good luck.
Cool. I mean, the only question I've got is you can see the racial pride flag, as she mentioned, in one of those books. So how does that function with the LGB bookstore? Because, of course, that is the intersectional stuff.
Yes.
Which is very different. Go to the next one.
Say hi, Peaches. Hi, Peaches.
Hey, Peaches.
This is my grandma's dog, huh? She's a big old standard poodle, huh?
So I finally purchased a pistol. It's the first legal pistol I have. And, yeah, it's really fancy. It's a M&P shield. And then tomorrow is the day, and technically when you guys watch this, it'll be the day. But so, the last drink of my 20s.
Was that good?
That was straight Jägermeister. It can't be good.
God. Ugh. Legal pistol, she said. Right. First legal pistol. Oh, right. Anyway, but there's... I mean, like, I'm just seeing the things that I want. Like, I want guns, I want dogs, so you're living the life.
So you want to be some kind of British aristocrat from a few years ago. You can have some beagles, like a red coat, go hunting with your rifle.
And you don't?
I didn't say I didn't either.
Right!
That's our weekend plan sorted.
Anyway. Yeah. Oh. Oop, what happened there?
Guys, you're really painting me into a corner here. If Fauci can't speak for science, how can I speak for oil? But my identity. Oh, for f*** sake, I think you've blue-pilled me.
Yeah, but you actually have something to do with oil. He doesn't have anything to do with science. He just has to do with whatever he has to say today. I mean, if he had anything to do with science, he wouldn't have held every position possible on COVID. So, I don't know if we skip one there, because there was a map of Swindon, Michael. I don't know if we can go back or not.
There it is.
Hey there, it's your Oklahoma Patriarch of Dadism. Being a little bit of an Anglophile, I decided to appropriate me some culture last night. Welcome to the White Lion English Pub in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tonight we had sausage rolls followed by peas and meat pasty with chips and lovely HP sauce. Only chips, no fries. Fries are French. The owners freighted all the furniture from a pub in the UK that was closing down, so everything inside here is older than a whole bloody country. Give him a visit if you're in town. Tell Peter I sent you and ask him to tell a story about how he met his wife. I absolutely love coming here, and I bring friends every time.
It does look quite authentic, although I've never seen gravy on a sausage roll before. But, I mean, at least you tried. And, I mean, it's good, and I'm flattered that you tried out our culture.
I know the Northerners have chips and gravy, so they probably do sausage rolls and gravy.
I mean, it's not beyond the realm of reason. I mean, if you go up north, they cover everything in gravy.
I did always have this fantasy in my head of, like, if I moved to the United States, I'd really want to open, like, a pub. And just make actually good British food and just be like, look, eat this. Yeah, it's good, right? Now eat more. Give me more. But I, you know, so whoever's running that place, it'll be good to meet them. And also they're living the life. But,
yeah, thanks for sharing us.
What was the name? It was the White something. White.
We'll be able to.
White Horse in Oklahoma. So
go okay. Look at that.
So my question is about bail. Is it moral to even have bail? I mean, if you're innocent until proven guilty, then shouldn't you be a free person? Even if you've been caught bloody with a knife in your hand, you haven't been proven to be a murderer. Isn't the judge presuming some level of guilt by setting a bail at all?
No, and you would have to think about suspects in a crime case anyway, because you've got to take them for questioning or just detain them to do whatever, right? Like take their fingerprints. And if you're saying that having someone in jail before they've been proven guilty in court is a presumption of guilt and therefore is wrong, like I don't know how you plan on doing any police work. But on the concept of bail, one thing I know that we have very different with the United States is the cash bail system. So the Americans seem to have everything is for sale almost. Like you could have run down kids at a parade and somehow you'll get a cash bail that you could reach. I mean, $5 million. I mean, I know he's not going to do it, but it's just like White Lion chats as high. Okay, good. But anyway, but the idea that that guy should ever leave the jail cell before the court case, if he did have $5 million, you know, if he had a rich uncle, what are you, high?
Like, so no. Rich people can get away with crimes, basically.
Yeah, it's insane. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you know, he was already out on jumping bail as well. So you would have thought there would have been a system of being like, well, there is no bail. No, you're clearly just going to be detained until the court case.
I think that
the idea that he could have been able to get out.
I think there should be an option for the victims of a crime to be able to choose whether a person has a longer sentence or they do a sentence plus pay the victim some of their money. I mean, it's better than just paying the government money, because the victim of the crime also has to pay for the person being imprisoned because they pay for it through their taxes, right?
But we have that for libel law and whatnot, so I don't know why it couldn't be transferred to criminal law.
Well, I think giving someone some money in return, they don't get anything from sending them to prison, really, other than a bit of peace of mind, whereas getting some money for it is a bit more tangible.
So if you were assaulted or robbed or something, you could take a year off that guy's sentence, instead he has to pay you some certain amount of cash. A
couple of grand.
Damages.
Yeah, I think that'd be fine.
I'd take it.
Yeah, I mean, if I get a black eye for a couple of grand, it sounds like a good deal to me.
Yeah, I found the fault in the system. Like, it's going to be you rigging it. Anyway.
It's going to get people to punch me.
Yes. Anyway. But anyway, that's my thoughts on that.
Well, hello. I want to bring up something that I neglected to mention in my past video about the freedom protests in Sydney last week. I forgot to mention the strange media reaction to the protest. Now, of course, it wasn't positive because it's left-wing media. What do you expect? But their reaction wasn't so much of anger, but one of confusion. They literally do not understand
why people were protesting.
I don't know why that's set up.
Yeah. I assume that's to keep with the 30-second limit, which please do keep to for everyone as well. But the confusion, I mean, it is strange when you meet media types who are actually writing that, you know, some group is white supremacist, even though you know they don't know. Sorry, they either don't know or you know that they're lying, right? I mean, usually it's just progressives and they're lying because political gain. So, I mean, it's not really unexpected. So I don't really know what to say. I mean, there is the small chance that journo was just a moron. But, I mean, that moronic? I don't think so. We're out of video comments. Let's get the written ones on the site. So on the new race manifesto, which, oh God. The Labour race manifesto, a student of history says, this manifesto is legitimately going to cause racism and not just race opinions. I mean, yeah, Ella Hill actually noted in the response to hate crimes, the way the Welsh government ended up sort of defining racism was bad things that happen to brown people because of white people. Like, right, so if a white person is a victim of a racial hate crime, how do we get that logged? Because that doesn't be encompassed in part of the definition. And Ella made the point that she had actually been a victim of a racial hate crime in Wales as well, and she reported it to the police, and the police just didn't do anything with it. They were just like, well, it's not really a hate crime, is it? Because you're white.
Oh, great.
That's how these things work. So, yeah, it will cause racism. Already has. Oakwood Wood? Weird name. Nothing says, we have been accepted immediately as being Welsh, more than giving some special treatment and then constantly asking them whether their experiences have been, but not asking anyone else the same questions. Yeah, also demanding it. I demand you call me Welsh.
You're Welsh.
There's nothing more legitimate than force. The worst thing is that I'm paying for this garbage. Yes, you are. And with the rest of us, because Wales gets loads of money from central government as well.
Mm-hmm.
Based Ape says, give us jobs, but only the jobs with the most pay that requires education and skills I don't have. Gibbs, or I call you names. Literally. And I'm sorry, I know we joke about it, but I mean, these organizations are real and they're destroying the country we live in. So,
it's basically all predicated on resource extraction from other people, isn't it? It's just, I want social, political, and economic capital because you're racist. Now give me.
But redistributed on racial lines. So, I really hate that this literally is all ideologically the fault of some black American. Like, it feels like cultural imperialism on a level I don't understand.
We can't continue to blame America now it's so entrenched in our own country. I mean, we're letting the people off who actually espouse it.
Intersectionality does come from leftist Americans like Kimberly Crenshaw. Mm-hmm. But I find it like, almost on a cultural level, I feel like I'm being oppressed by America. It's just like this stupid American idea from the stupid American woman who doesn't even understand the United States, but has applied her stupid theory to the United States. And then it's been transferred over to us. It makes even less sense over here. And yet it's got to the point that it's influencing government policy, hiring practices, and treatment from the state. I was like, I really want to just be really anti-Yankee and just be like, shh, back to Yankee with you.
But, yeah, but half the country is like held hostage by the crazy half, aren't they?
It's not
all of their fault.
But it does come from the United States. I have the same feeling. So we're going to have a podcast up about this later on, actually. When I look at North Korea, and it's just like, you're just being held hostage by the Germans. Like, who in Korea came up with socialism? It's not happening. You know, it's not there. You know, it's clearly some German socialism nonsense that's been transferred through Russia that is now transferred down to North Korea, and then all those people have to live under it. I mean, you know, I almost feel white guilt looking at
that. That's a funny way of looking at it, because I mean...
Anyway.
To be honest, it's more the Soviets, isn't it, in Korea, because they occupied it.
No one in Russia came up with socialism, come on.
Well, I mean... Lenin kind of changed it, didn't he?
Not really.
Well, he came up with Leninism.
What? Just
the vanguard party rather than a workers.
So he took the theory and then realized it had to be done by force. I mean, it's not really a philosophical, you know, advancement, is it? Anyway, maybe go. So a student of history says, equality through separation. Where in the world have I heard this conversation before? Oh yeah, back in the 60s, where there were white and black nationalists came together and said F race mixing. They're still together saying F race mixing. A carbohydrate crusader, whenever I talk to my normal friends, colleagues about the segregation or supremacist stuff, they seemed really shocked. Why are people so disconnected from what's actually happening in the world right now? The white guilt / savior complex has severely damaged people's ability to push back against this really damaging narrative and way of life, in my opinion. So they just push on, head into the clouds, ignoring it, which makes it worse for them and all of us. Yeah, I don't know what to do with normies at this point.
I think
I feel like I'm entrenching it too much.
I think people just don't want to wade into politics because it's an emotionally draining thing. I'm sure you know that just as well as I do, that it takes a lot of deliberate effort as well as the fact that you get very little in return. So you've got to be pretty certain what you're getting out of following politics to even follow it in the first place. Otherwise, from the outside, it seems like it's just a waste of time and makes you miserable. But if you say, okay, there are people attacking foundational principles of your entire country, then all of a sudden you're like, okay, yeah.
But also you yourself, like, you're going to not get job opportunities because of your skin tone. How do you feel about that?
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, we're not debating a 1% tax cut.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not, you know, I know politics can be boring and complex or whatever. You know, there's no stupid economic arguments going on. This is so personal, where it's just like, no, you and your children will not have the same opportunities as someone else because of your skin tone. And people still bury their heads in the sand or in the clouds. I find it strange. Anyway, so Chris Wolf says, it really does seem like Omicron is the next evil spell cast upon the minds of the fearful. First it was coronavirus, then COVID, then unvaccinated, then Delta, now Omicron. Is it a subservience of the word of science? People are acting so religious in this secular age, I wonder what they will call their new religion when the woke branch of the Catholic Church finally splits off.
Well,
question for you, really.
Fear is the best way to get people to act irrationally about things. And when people are scared of something, they want a strong authority to make that fear go away, which is often the government. So in generating lots and lots of fear, it basically means that people are more willing to give up their liberties, their freedoms, to government, And that's part of the reason I think that you're getting this endless cycle of fear-mongering. And it's also why people are turning to like a religious-like treatment of it, because they want salvation. They want the fear to go away because it's deeply uncomfortable to them.
I remember Reagan always saying, what is it, Democrats worship the state? And it's like, never been truer. Captain Charlie the Beagle says, my prediction for Wales is that they will declare the Welsh language racist as a tool of white supremacists.
Already done.
Apparently already done. And then they will try and either dismantle it or change it to be more inclusive.
They're already trying, yeah.
You know, it's Celtic, so it's not white anyway. So, but if you want to go on for the questions on your segment.
Sure. Baron von Warhawk, the strange thing about this world-ending virus is that where are the plague carts? Where are the abandoned towns and cities? Where are the corpses in the streets and the mass graves and overrun hospitals? Once you turn off the TV and go outside, it seems to just magically disappear. My opinion is that this plague requires us to give up all of our rights and wear a face diaper everywhere we go to survive it. It better be the real deal.
Yeah? I mean, the hospital's point is the right point there. Because, I mean, all of this was predicated on the hospitals being overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Well, if they're not being overwhelmed, none of it's justified.
Well, yeah, of course. I 100% agree. And also, isn't COVID like 99.9% deadly in the entire population?
And 99.9% survivability.
Yes. That's the glass half full.
Actually, I think it is. I think it is worse than that. So I think it's like 97% or 98% survivability. So it's like 2-3% chance of death on average.
Okay.
If you're older, then of course it increases exponentially.
But yeah, it's not like the Black Death where a third of all of Europe were killed. I'm pulling that figure off the top of my head, so that might not be right.
That's about right.
So yeah, it's not like the plagues of old, is it? It's relatively, historically speaking, harmless, but obviously still not good to get it. M1 Ping, incoming German Chancellor blaming groups of people for a health crisis. I don't like where this is going. Free Will, 2112. COVID has simply provided the excuse for globalists to introduce a CCP-style social credit score system whilst they build back better in time for 2030. If reports are to be believed, a lot of the new accommodation for unvaccinated people is being built in Australia. Yeah, fresh prison island.
Did you see the story this morning about a lady has escaped from a voluntary-only camp in Australia by climbing over the barbed wire? Voluntary camp, barbed wire.
That's like, not a good look, is it? There was also one that set fire to her bed, wasn't it, when she was being kept in a hotel in quarantine in Australia. So it seems like they're going a bit nuts over there.
Why do you need barbed wire on a voluntary camp?
It's just so many people want to get in there. That's what it is. They've got to keep people out. It's so nice there. Omar Awad, it's so mild. I don't understand why we can't just treat the Omicron variant like chickenpox and deliberately spread it so we can gain immunity before it gets much worse later. Can't have talk about natural herd immunity, though. Think of the poor Pfizer execs. Yes, I thought this exact thing, actually, when I was preparing my notes for this, that, you know, it's probably much better to get this. But the fact that the government have a deal with Pfizer, that there's lots of hidden legal ramifications going on. Who knows what's in there, that they have to continue with this approach. Based Ape, stop being racist. We need to help the blacks, women and disabled. I think that's not to do with the COVID stuff. I think that's...
I really do want to see some hats or something. It's like, please be patient, I'm a woman. I want to go to a Labour Party conference or something with like a shirt or a hat or something like that. Mm-hmm. And just be like, so what's wrong with the shirt? Tell me what's wrong. Because I got it off your website. You know, you guys put them in the same category, not me. Like, you're the ones who are just like, yeah, being black, being a woman, being disabled, all in the same category for me. Yeah.
Oh dear. I'm going to read some of the Trump comments as well. Bilbo Swaggins, do you think when the Queen passes that will be the beginning of the end for the royal family? I don't know. I don't think so.
Depends if Charles takes the crown.
I think Charles isn't going to be insufferable enough to get rid of.
Well, I'm hoping he does the right thing and abdicates when it lands on his head, and then it'll go to William, and then all will be well and merry.
Will it, though? I mean, he goes to the World Economic Forum, William.
Yeah, he seems to be doing a hell of a lot of a better job than Charles. Like, Charles actually just goes out and does politics, and it's like, stop, what the fuck?
Henry Ashman, Trump's level of deference to the Queen is very heartening. I know he's always been very proud of his British heritage through his Scottish mother. Compare him to Joe, I'm Irish, honest Biden. He seems actively to detest the British and will do anything he can to damage the nation out of spite. He's probably the biggest ally of the IRA outside of Corbyn. Whether you like it or not, what? Whether you not I can't read that. If you like Britain, the monarch, everyone should respect the Queen for the job she's done to rule over a quarter of America's existence without a single scandal. It's almost unimaginable.
Yeah, I mean, it. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't ever think about it, but I mean, Trump bringing it up there is a good point, because you think the amount of like crap that was thrown at him, the hoaxes and all the rest of it, the nonsense Biden has produced, or even just any president has had scandal after scandal, and Her Majesty has gone through decades upon decades, nada, nothing, just goodest girl around.
Edward Brackstone, the Queen has been a huge disappointment. She hasn't defended the Church of England from communist subversion, and her being political goes against the oath she took. We've had better queens.
You could argue, but it's also the time in which we live. So I imagine, looking back to the other queens who were able to do political things, but we don't live there anymore. You know, things have changed. She does have some powers, of course, as I laid out, the politics of the crown that she can influence. And on the point of the Church of England, specifically on divorce, you've got a very good point there. I mean, that is something that has completely lapsed. But she did try her best. Not best. So the point being that she made very firm on Charles that he should not have been cheating Diana. But Diana was also cheating on him. They tried to keep that down. The fact that she made her relationship with Charles work, even though that was on the rocks at times. She didn't not try, but she's not all powerful as well.
Of course. And the final comment I'm going to read is by Jimbo G. Wonder if Meghan has found a Nazi uniform in Harry's wardrobe yet.
She's the one wearing it. Anyway, so we're out of time, so we'll end that there. If you want more from us, go to lotusseas.com, subscribe, that's how you get access to all the content and how we keep the show running. But other than that, we'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thank you and goodbye.